one of the final, I just remember one of the final times we were talking, she said, Susie, don't do this. She said, don't wait till someday and don't keep living your life for someone else. And I still get goosebumps. And it was this tragic yet incredibly life-changing moment for me, where it's not like I went home that day and started speaking up for myself with my husband, but I certainly sort of like lifted out of this matrix. Like, what am I doing? Like, what kind of life, who am I living this for? Am I living it for the PTA president who doesn't, you know, and am I living it for, you know, my mother-in-law or for my dad or for like, where's that getting me? And so that's why I say I really didn't, I spent the first 35 years of my life not loving my life, living on a bit of a fog, like thinking I was doing the right thing. And maybe if I did the right thing long enough, I'd feel okay. And that just wasn't
enough.
Measuring up. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hi, I'm Biz Cush, a life coach and therapist, and your host here on the Awaken Your Wise Woman podcast. We're talking to women all over the world who found their way back to themselves, to their inner knowing, to their intuition, to their wisest self. We're exploring how to feel alive, authentic, engaged, and fully present in your life. Let's awaken your wise woman. Welcome back to the Awaken Your Wise Woman podcast. I'm Biz Cush, your host, and I'm super excited about my guest today, Susie Pettit. She and I have gotten to know each other through Instagram, which is funny to me that we can make these pretty beautiful connections through a social media platform, but we've been following each other for a while, and she had me as a guest on her podcast, and we decided to kind of do a swap. So we each interviewed each other. So she's going to be on my podcast this week, which is pretty fun. Susie shares her story of getting through a difficult divorce and bringing herself into a life that she loves. She called in all the way from Australia, which is pretty amazing too, that we can make these connections across the world. Before we jump into this conversation, if you are interested in knowing when new groups will be forming or how to work with me as a life coach, if you're a sensitive woman, you can sign up for my newsletter at elizabethcushcoaching.com/sign-up. My last name is spelled with a C, not a K. So if you're typing in Elizabeth Cush with a K, you probably won't find me. And without further ado, here's a little bit more about Susie. Susie Pettit has been helping women live lives they love for over 20 years. She is the founder of the Love Your Life School and the podcast host of the Love Your Life Show. She is a certified parent, life, and wellness coach and mom of 5 sons, ages 18 to 25. Susie is passionate about helping women live lives that feel as good on the inside as they look on the outside. She spent more than half of her life living a life she did not love as a people pleaser and codependent perfectionist. She reflects that it's as if she was trying to win an award for Martyr of the Year. Luckily, she hit rock bottom and now has the breadth of experience to teach firsthand about setting boundaries, healthy boundaries, beating your inner critic, conscious parenting, and how to use mindfulness-based tools to beat the overwhelm and anxiety. You can find more about Susie on her website, which I will include in the show notes. So let's get into this amazing conversation with Susie Pettit. Hi, Susie, and welcome to the Awaken Your Wise Woman podcast.
Thank you very much. I love awakening my wise woman. So I am thrilled to be here. I've been a listener of your podcast for a long time. I love what you're doing.
Oh, that is so nice to hear. And it was so fun to be a guest on your podcast, which I really enjoyed. And interestingly, just for the love of podcasting, I know you're in Australia, so I get to talk to you and you're already at tomorrow. And earlier today, I talked to someone in Italy. And
that's so cool.
It just is so amazing to me that we can chat with women all over the world and connect that way, this way, in such a unique format. But for the listeners who don't know who you are, could you share a little bit about yourself and what inspires you?
Yeah. So my name is Susie Pettit, and I am currently 52, and I am currently living on the East Coast of Australia. I am a mental health coach for women over 40, and I run a Love Your Life school for all of us who, you know, I mean, education doesn't stop at 25. And yet, you know, we often aren't taught the tools that we need to love our life and manage our brains and take care of our mental health. That we sort of approach it more from an illness model. And so I like taking it from the wellness model. And I do this because my podcast is called The Love Your Life Show, and my school is The Love Your Life School, because I lived a life for many years that I didn't love.
Right.
So I very much, it's not like we're born with these skills, and I'm very aware of that. And so many of the messages in my head and messages that I get from clients when I work with them is like, why didn't I learn this sooner? And it's just, we don't know what we don't know. And so we go through life, our brains are amazing and we adapt to our situation. And yet we think that's normal. And then we don't think to maybe get out of a relationship or to stop people pleasing or to set some boundaries, or because it feels really uncomfortable to our nervous system if we're used to one way. And I just love, you asked me what lights me up and what inspires me. I love helping women learn how to support their nervous system so that they can push past the discomfort and step into these more aligned lives that feel better to them in their everyday, not just on vacation, but their everyday life. It just lights me up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you shared, you know, I always have guests fill out a little questionnaire, and you shared that you didn't love your life for the first 30 to 35 years. Mm-hmm. And like, one, that's really sad. Mm-hmm. Two, I don't think you're alone in that.
Yeah. And I didn't know that.
Right.
I am just this like optimistic, like, and I was just caught. It's like I was trudging up this mountain, carrying this massive backpack. Like I was just trying to do the right thing. But yeah, I was raised up in Massachusetts. So, you know, New England, very wonderful place. The house I was raised in I was the oldest of three daughters. And everything in that house revolved around my dad. And I can remember from a very early age that I was told that I should have been a boy. Like my earliest memories of my dad were telling me I should have been a boy. Boys are better. So I sort of started world thinking that there was something inherently wrong with me that I could never change. Like I could never sort of get over this hurdle. And so I just went from that into trying to do everything else perfectly, because if maybe I could be a perfect flawed girl, that would somehow measure up, you know, and be at least good enough.
Wow.
Yeah. It was really an interesting dynamic. And my mom had drank the Kool-Aid, and so everything revolved around my dad, keeping my dad happy. If my dad said, you know, we did this, and that's just what I thought then. I very much looked. So maybe listeners don't have such an extreme situation where their dad literally said that, but a lot of the programming we get is to look outside of ourselves for approval. So I was looking to my dad for that approval. I was looking to other male figures for that approval of like, is this okay? Is this good enough? And discounting my own knowledge or opinions or even those of my mother or, you know, I mean, my mother really didn't have many opinions other than it was sort of my dad, but it is this idea that it's like, oh, let's look outside of us. And I just, it's like this race in, you know, I had this race to like okay, well, maybe if I do good enough in high school and I'm like, maybe the vice president of the class and I'm head of the captain of the field hockey team, and then I'll get into the right school, and then I'll get in, and then I get married to a man who's like a combination of my mom and dad, and I'm not thinking anything differently. And then I'm trying to people please everyone. I'm the PTA person's like, can you make the brownies? Sure. I don't like baking. I'll make them all, you know?
So, oh my gosh. Yes.
And
yes,
it wasn't
yes.
until I was in my mid 30s, and one of my dear friends I grew up in Massachusetts and then moved down to Virginia and raised my boys in Virginia on the East Coast of America. And I had a play group, and in this play group, we were living sort of parallel lives where we would get together every week and complain about our husbands and our lives and our, like, you know, whatever. And then, because that's just what we knew what to do. That's what my mom modeled. That's what was modeled for me. That's sort of like the, you know, it's like, okay, this is what we do. We complain and then you get back into it. Like, you armor up, come on, go. Like, you've got it.
Yeah. And then put your head down and get through it.
Do the same thing over and come back the next week. And it was like complaining about the same thing. It's just, you know, maybe the stories had changed. And in my mid 30s, she was diagnosed with stage 4 colon cancer. And within several years, she passed. And I was, you know, one of her main caregivers. And actually, when she was diagnosed, to the time that she passed, she ended up getting a divorce from her husband. She ended up really making some life changes. And one of the final times we were talking, she said, Susie, don't do this. She said, don't wait till someday and don't keep living your life for someone else. And I still get goosebumps. And it was this tragic yet incredibly life-changing moment for me, where it's not like I went home that day and started speaking up for myself with my husband, but I certainly sort of like lifted out of this matrix. Like, what am I doing? Like, what kind of life, who am I living this for? Am I living it for the PTA president who doesn't, and am I living it for, my mother-in-law or for my dad or for, like, where's that getting me? And so that's why I say I spent the first 35 years of my life not loving my life, living on a bit of a fog, like thinking I was doing the right thing. And maybe if I did the right thing long enough, I'd feel okay. And that just wasn't
enough.
Measuring up. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so what, I mean, I know you did shift your life pretty drastically, here you are in Australia and divorced, I think. Yes. So, like, sort of what were the tools? What were the things that helped you come out of the fog and to realize big changes need to happen? Because that sounds terrifying on the one hand and also incredibly liberating.
Yes. Yes. On this side of it, I can say it's incredibly liberating. I'm living on the other side of the world in a business. My dad, one of the things he said is women can't do business. So I was a stay-at-home mom, and I have a thriving business. I am married in an incredibly healthy, non-codependent marriage. Like, I have 5 sons who I have raised to be it is significantly different. And I also want to say that if anyone has heard my story, where I am now and like sort of the extreme about face from where I was is not common, nor necessary, because to answer your question, like, how did I get started? We have to start small. And so I just got started by starting to speak up more to my husband, even as my friend was dying. Because my marriage was very much like the marriage I was raised in, where if my husband said, you can't do this, I was like, okay, isn't that what wives are supposed to do? And when my friend was dying, I was taking a lot of care of her, and he would say things like, you can't go do that. And I would say, but I'm going to. Like, I started to speak up in little ways, and I started to do different things. Like, I started to listen to podcasts, which is why I have a podcast. And that's when I probably started listening to your show. I started to get different messages in my brain. I don't want to underemphasize that, because when we're like in these situations and we're doing what the people around us are doing, that feels very normal. And our brain can settle to normal, even if normal is quite miserable.
Is dysfunctional, right? Right.
Is dysfunctional or is like so many women are just fried and burnt out and just, running and doing and filling your schedule. And that can feel so normal. And we look around and we're like, that's what everyone else is doing. Yeah. And so the way to start is something small, because my story, basically, like I started small and then everything blew up. My dad supported my ex. He paid for my ex's divorce lawyer. I had so much money taken from me. I was living in it was just really, there were dark days. Oh. There were just because I don't know if you know about Virginia, but if you are married in Virginia, you're still the property of your husband. And so, yeah. So any money that we had that I could not prove was mine from premarital earnings was my husband's first and foremost. So I really, other than our house there, like none of, cause I was a stay at home mom. So none of the assets, all of that sort of stuff. Plus we were married in 1996, which is before anything was computerized and on all the stuff. And so I had one paper document that showed my maiden name and my premarital earnings. And those premarital earnings had grown and, you know, compounding interest over 25 something years. It had reached $472,000 or $476,000. And my dad was very against me dissolving the marriage because it was, I mean, I understand it now. Like if I dissolved the marriage, I was sort of going against, like, then what the heck was he doing in his marriage? And, you know, it was sort of pushing against everyone's belief. And so in an effort to get me to stop, he, on a video with me, shredded that document, which meant that all $472,000 went to my ex-husband. It wasn't split between us. It was my premarital. It went to him. And so I was pretty much bankrupt. In Virginia, you're the possession of your husband. And so I had to live in the basement of my house for a year, my unfinished basement, because if I left, he said that he would say that I abandoned the kids and I would lose custody. And if I took them with me, he'd say I kidnapped the kids. Yeah. And so it was just like,
oh my gosh.
I reflected recently because I took a wonderful trip to Bali and I was like, from bankrupt in the basement to breakfast in Bali.
It's possible. Wow. It sounds like a book, right?
And yet I don't want to skate over just the acute, deep darkness that I would feel some days. And what wherever the listener is, whether, you know, they're feeling that acute darkness or they're just feeling sort of an unsettled, like, yeah, I'm not really loving my life. I thought it would feel different than this is something I hear a lot of women say.
Me too. You just start
small. And, you know, one thing that I don't know when this is coming out, but one thing that works no matter what is putting yourself maybe on a yes diet I say like a 24-hour yes diet. So if someone asks you, like, do you want to go out to coffee or can you make the brownies or can you host this dinner? You just say, you know what, I'm going to get back to you tomorrow. And you just start there and your nervous system will feel what I mean by that. Like your chest might feel tight. You might feel short of breath. You might feel guilty is something I hear women say. They feel guilty for not saying that automatic yes. And one thing that I like leading people to see is that guilt, when we feel guilt, often we think, oh, I've done something wrong. I got to fix it. But I like looking at the emotion of guilt as a sign that I'm coming up against old conditioning, that these are old messaging. It's not that I'm doing something wrong. It's that I'm like, it's that like, oh my gosh, my body's like, I've been so programmed in this way. And now I'm doing something different and it feels uncomfortable. So I'm just going to sit. I'm going to breathe. I like to tap on my chest and say, I've done nothing wrong. Like, especially with that, if you're like, I'll get back to you tomorrow. That can feel so hard for some of us. I totally get it. And you weren't doing anything wrong. You're
And if they push you're giving yourself space to process and Oh and my gosh.
People will push you for an answer. And then I say, okay, if you need an answer right now, then it's no. And then you're really going to feel like vomiting in your mouth. And then you listen. And that's why I love podcasts like yours and like mine. And just like it's, you listen to people who are like, it's okay. You're not doing anything wrong. And so you start wherever you can. And then it's like you're like a little like marble on top of a mountain. When you start and you just start down that little side of the mountain, it's just like you say, I'll get back to you tomorrow. Or, you know, you're like, actually, I asked for cheese on my sandwich. Could you please get me some cheese on my sandwich? You know, instead of just
My soup is cold. Could you heat it up, please?
You know, that marble starts rolling down the hill and it gains momentum. So not only will it feel easier to you in your body, but things start changing in your life. And people do adjust. My situation was extreme, But I've worked with thousands of women where you sort of initially are changing that dance step. So the other person's like, what's going on? And then they like settle. They're like, oh, we're doing the salsa. I thought we were doing the ballroom. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. There
is this adjustment with a lot of relationships.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I have found that to be true. Just having been a people pleaser and a person being highly sensitive, thinking I had to sort of keep all the feelings inside. But in so many ways too, like those old patterns keep us feeling disconnected and not connected fully with the people in our lives, which I think that piece only comes from learning, right? From doing it differently, showing up differently. And if the people in your life aren't meeting you there, then okay, that might be something else that needs to go or reevaluated or.
Yeah. And that is one of the things that I hear so often from women, that like people don't know the real me, women and men, people don't know the real me. And you know, right? It's because we're not showing them the real me. People pleasing is people deceiving. We are lying. It's like, sure, I'll do that. Or yeah, it's fine. Or, oh, great. You know, like, and even them asking you how you're doing, you saying you're fine when you're not.
Yeah.
Like, I'm really having a rough day. And if people pleasing worked, maybe it's time to go for it, but it doesn't work. They sort of lean into this other version of you that they think is there. You feel further and further disconnected and resentment builds and irritation. And then often we get to midlife and we're like, what is going on?
Like, what happened? How come I don't feel present in my life anymore or at all or ever?
Yeah. Which is that wise woman of your podcast, which I just love that, because that sometimes I will ask myself, as I said, I'm 52. Sometimes I fast forward 20 years. And I'm like, what would 72-year-old self say? Like, how would she comfort Susie right now?
Like, that's so nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and I think as we get more used to feeling some of the discomfort, sort of listening inside, like, what is it that I'm feeling? We build that trust within ourselves to like, well, maybe I do know what I want. Maybe using your example, maybe it is okay to ask for cheese on my sandwich if I don't get it.
Yeah, and I'm bigger things. Paying for a service. Their job is to complete my order. And right? I'm feeling guilty for asking what I want.
Yeah. Yeah. That sense like you're a burden or too much or burden, whatever it is.
That is so embedded in us. That's that like good girl messaging. And I think some of what happens in midlife is what happened to me in my mid-30s, where death is just a little closer. I mean, we might be hearing of people getting diagnoses, or we might, you know, I mean, we've heard of more, and you just are, you're sort of, you get to this age and maybe your kids are out of the house and you're like, okay, well, what kind of life am I living?
Right.
What about me? Like this little, you know, I know you do parts work. It's like that little part in you that's like, what about me?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So much. Yeah. And if you're open to listening with compassion, you'll hear a lot, right? Yes. A lot of like, what about me? Yeah. And, or you've forgotten about me, or you're not tending to me with love and care.
And I hear a lot of people say like people don't know the real me. And then I hear a lot of people like say, but I don't know what I want. Like almost like a paralysis and almost like panicky, like, but I don't know what I want. And I just want, I get it. I didn't either. There's, you know, people are like, well, just what do you want? You're like, I don't freaking know. And so I just encourage people to start the practice of sort of brainstorming what you might like. And even more available to some people is what they don't want. That's sometimes like, I have people like keep a don't want and a want list. So maybe they're like, I don't know what I want. Like maybe I want another shirt, but or maybe I want more connection with my husband, but I'm not sure, you know, like, but I know that I don't want to be arguing so much, or I don't want to be pressured to go to this thing, or I don't want to feel how I feel when I go to bed. Like both sides are going to be learning opportunities.
Yeah. Yeah. Bring shed some light to what's happening inside.
Yeah.
Yeah. It feels like it must have been so scary to want to move away from everything that you knew, but just to make so many changes, I know some of them weren't your choice, but to take these first steps must have been a little bit scary.
I was terrified. I was, don't get me wrong. I was on Xanax. I was on Lexapro. I was there. It's like my body reached a point where it no longer could function. Like it just, I couldn't not see what was in front of me. And that's why I'm saying it wasn't an overnight switch, but from my friend passing, I started to speak up more with my husband. Then I kept doing the scary little steps, asked him to go to marital therapy. Then progressed into years. We went to 4 different marriage therapists. The final marriage therapist fired us. He's like, this isn't like both parties need to be involved, because he always was saying, it was me, it's my fault. Right. And then just starting to go to the divorce proceedings, there are all these little steps. And I don't want to give any impression that I was this calm little cucumber. In fact, there was one point where because my sons, I don't like sharing too much of their story, but they definitely were eager for this dynamic of this relationship to not be their reality anymore. The kids are aware of it. They were aware of it before we even started going to marriage counseling. They can pick up on that, little hound dogs. And I just remember one time I went to my lawyer thinking that I was already living in the basement at the time. And we told our kids, mom's back is bad. And then eventually, we thought we were sort of near the time where we would move out. And I went to my lawyer and he said, you have to be in there for a year. Your husband is saying no, that this marriage, he was fighting. One thing he said to me, he said, I will stay married to you forever, even though I hate your guts. But it was image. And it's that do the right thing, Susie. And
you're breaking this American dream whatever, this perfect picture.
Yeah. And so he had my dad is incredibly wealthy. So he had the wealth of my dad behind his legal team and his resolve to just in the past, he said, don't wear, he didn't like me wearing button down shirts. In the past, when he told me not to wear button down shirts, I wouldn't wear a button down shirt. So that was his experience. Like, if I push hard enough, Susie will cave. So pushing. And then I just remember this one time I went to my lawyer and I was thinking that, we'd be able to move out quickly. And he said, no. And I came home and told my son, Mom, when are we moving out? And I said, honey, not right now. I just had to say, it's not gonna be right now. And from that moment, that was a Thursday afternoon until Monday, I had 32 seizures in my, I think that was my, my mind, I'm trying to hold it all together, my body. And it's I ended up in the ER. And everything else, I was actually a very fit person at that time because I was getting a lot of my stress out by over-exercising. And so in the ER, all my tests were coming back normal. And then I'd seize. I'd have this massive seizure. And they're like, what is going on? And a guy was walking through the ER visiting from Johns Hopkins, which you'll recognize. Ed's a great institute. And he had just finished a research study. And he overheard them talking about me. And he's like, can I just go talk to her for a second? And he came in. He's like, is there anything going on in your life? And this is back in, 2012, when they weren't really connecting the dots as much.
And I
said, yes. And he had just got done with a study that showed seizures happening in returning war veterans and women in high stakes custody battles. I was like,
whoa, that's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. So it wasn't easy at all. And yet it is in taking those, it was just I spent a lot of time on the floor crying. And then yet I had procedures and sort of systems in my day set up. I'm a very habitual person, and I had already been studying the brain and how the brain lays habit loops. And so I had certain things that I did that set me up for success. For example, at the end of the night, I always wrote a gratitude list, even though wasn't right. much of the,
it was hard to find things.
I would try to look for something. I remember my coach giving me a prompt. She's like, how could it be worse? That was actually really helpful for me at that time. Like, I was like, like maybe they could have kicked me out of the house and I could be homeless right now. Like that sort of thing.
Sure.
I also every morning would wake up and try to think of something that I could look forward to.
Mm.
I also, in my darkest days, remember that I used to listen to this one song, and I made myself listen to it every day. I think the artist's name is Ellie Goulding, and it is like "Everything Will Be All Right" or something. And I can just remember probably hundreds of days where I would listen to this song, and there's a part of it where she goes, "Everything's gonna be, everything's gonna be, everything's gonna be," and then she goes, "All right," and I would pound my hands in the air, even if I was in the middle of like the WNOD and the most crowded day. I just, you know, there was 98% of myself that didn't believe it, that I was like, this is not going to be okay. My family is against me. My sister said she would testify in court as to what a bad mom I was. Like, I mean, things were blowing up. And yet it was just like, it's like when you have that glimmer, you have to hold onto it with your whole might.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I just feel like there's this part of you that was so determined to live a better life, to do things differently, that like throughout, I mean, it sounds so heartbreaking and terrible that your family turned against you and your husband, quite frankly, it sounds like he was a dick.
Yeah.
But like that this part of you just kept striving and kept hope. Yeah.
I mean, at the time, and I need to say, my husband, he was just far down on that emotional immaturity scale. And he married this woman who was this shell of herself, who was this, like, I people pleased my husband. So he married this version of me that he thought was real. And if he says wear a button down shirt and I'm like, okay, then he thinks I'm fine with it. So, you know, yeah, like there's definitely, there was emotional and verbal abuse as we started, you know, he sort of lost his shit as we were going through it. But, you know, I can understand, and I can understand my dad's reaction.
He's like, what happened to my wife?
Yeah, right. And I get my dad where he's like, oh no, this doesn't work. I mean, they both are very much in like what it looks like. So I definitely get that. And yes, I agree. There was a part of me, it didn't start from, you know, sometimes they're like, you have to love yourself first to make changes. And like, and it didn't start from that first. For me, it was a starting of, it really stuff started to pressurize when my oldest son started to reach like preteen and teen years. And I just in my head knew that I did not like the parenting he was getting and the sort of feedback he was getting. And so it really started as this like mama bear type thing. Yeah. Like, oh no, I am not having this. And then it definitely, when I sort of went to marriage therapy thinking like, oh, okay, this will work. Like, awesome. Like, of course, like who wouldn't want to change and get better? You know, like
such
like naive little. And so that sort of started because I was like, I want a different marriage. Like I'm raising three boys. So what can I look at here? I came from a male dominated household. I married a male and I want this. I don't want to continue this. I don't
perpetuate it or right.
So my motivation started from outside of myself, as I had been trained to do my whole time.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until I got out of that environment that I could then turn and start healing myself. But I'm like, whatever motivates people to take a step forward towards growth, go for it. Because we are either growing or shrinking. Like I very easily at so many different points could have just, it would have been easier, quote unquote, to go back and said, okay, I'll stay married to you forever. I'll keep the money. I'll keep our house intact. You know, so many people are like, don't do this to the kids. I'm like, so anyone listening out there, please don't say that to people, because my kids were being harmed more than they can understand by staying in it.
Sure.
But it is that like that would have felt easier to my nervous system, but I don't know what would have happened to me. Like I would have had to kill off a part of myself. And we know there's, you know, productive discomfort, which is what I was definitely feeling. The discomfort of speaking up and taking these small steps, and it's productive. It's getting me somewhere. It's on that growth edge. And then there's the unproductive discomfort or the avoiding of, you know, where it's just this like, okay, I won't have that hard conversation. You know, I won't have that hard conversation. I won't have like the 30 seconds it takes for courage to say, I'm going to tell you, I'll get you my answer tomorrow. I'm going to not have that. And instead, yeah. I'm going to have 6 months of resentment, long-term discomfort, unproductive discomfort. It's sort of like short-term hard for long-term ease, or like short-term ease for long-term hard.
Discomfort.
Yeah. They choose your heart. Yeah.
And it seems like, I mean, I follow you on social media and, you know, watch your, you know, I mean, here, you know, listen to your podcast. And it seems like you have, I don't want to say it's like a recipe, but you work hard to bring joy into your life. Mm-hmm. One thing you said in my little questionnaire is like, you want people to love their lives, not just their vacation lives, which I feel like so many people live for vacation versus live for living their life. Yeah. So what would be some tips for people who maybe aren't struggling too much, but just want to bring more joy and happiness into the life they're living today?
Yeah. Yeah. There are two things for sure. I love like action steps. So one would be at the end of the day, think of something that went well, something like I like pairing things together for habit formation, pride and pillow. So when my head hits the pillow, I think of something I'm proud of myself for. Nighttime is a time where our DNA brain is like our wired brain is really into anxiety and thinking of like our old cavewoman self. We had to look for everything that went wrong. So I like to go over that programming. And when I'm lying back, think of something that I'm proud of myself for. Pride sometimes can be too big a jump for some women. So even just thinking of something you're grateful for.
Yeah.
And that's a really good start. If they want to write it down, even better, because when we write, there's something neat that happens in the brain and just, you know, something that you can write, something that you're grateful. I like doing GTP, grateful, thankful, proud. I sort of warm up my brain with like grateful and thankful, which are essentially the same things. And then the pride sometimes can come a little easier where it's like, what did I do well today? What went well? Because there's always something that went wrong. And I guess that's my second piece. So have some sort of like, that would be a great starting point. At the end of your day, reflect, grateful, thankful, proud. What went well today? Like, what is that one little piece that like you could say you did well? Like maybe you ate, you know, 10 Oreos, but you didn't go out and get more Oreos. Go you, you know, or maybe you like drank one bottle of wine, but you didn't drink two bottles of wine. Like we're just looking for that gain. When we're focusing on what we're doing wrong, we're not going to have progress. So that's one part is to just, that would be great to add in. The other thing that might be hard to hear, but it is just a reality, is that life is never going to be all joy and all rainbows and daisies. It is so never, we are never going to be 100% happy, nor do we want to be. We would be some sort of psychotic person. So even me, like, and I try to be clear with this on my social media, like I am living my dream life. I am living with my dream husband. I am not settling in the areas of my life. I am living on the beach, something I never thought possible for me. I am addressing aging in a way like I'm just doing all these things. And I still have days where I'm like sad or crying or I'm finding drama, and like life is 50-50.
Yeah.
There's also like, and we want it to because of that productive discomfort. If we didn't have the, we are either growing or shrinking is something people sort of skate over. But I'm like, so we're either, if we're shrinking, if we're not going after our goals, if we're not as women, whatever our ages, if we're not sort of living into our desires or having some sort of goal, we're avoiding that goal. And then we're feeling flat, burnt out. Who am I? That's discomfort. So that's one kind of discomfort. Or if we are going after our goals, I opened the Love Your Life School in September. That's, I was like, what am I doing? Oh my gosh, there's so many things to do. I'm like, so that wasn't a comfortable feeling state every day for me, but I was going after my, you know, I was so like, even though I'm, it's like, oh, today I'm feeling some stress or, oh, I'm, it's not going to be better there. And yet we can bring tools in. So there's less of this unproductive discomfort. Yeah. And more of the productive discomfort that leads us. So, you know, happiness, I like to point out to people, there are two parts to it. There's the feeling of that we feel in our body of joy and happiness. The other part, and Oprah just co-wrote a book with Arthur Brooks about this. The other part is this, while living a life in alignment, like we're working towards, we're in alignment with our values, or we're working towards some purpose or goal.
Yeah.
Now that sometimes can paralyze. They're like, I don't know my purpose. I'm like, it doesn't need to be like saving world hunger or something.
Right.
Like your purpose might be to just, I'm like, any goal, any desire you have is worthy. Maybe you do want to get into better shape. Well, start there. Just have something that you're working towards.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's such an important message that it's not all rainbows and sunshine, right? Like that life can be hard. We all struggle. And the balance between, as you said, the productive discomfort that we're growing, we're moving, we're changing, we're moving towards something versus just staying stagnant and just allowing that discomfort to sort of rule our life.
Yeah. And it's so funny because I work with a lot of moms, even moms whose kids are out of the house, and they're like, I just want my kid to be happy. I'm like, but you don't really, because our kids are happy sitting on the couch playing video games, eating Cheetos. Like, is that what you want? Like, is that a life we lived? Like, they're not, they don't work, but that's not, like, we want them to feel nervous when they're pushing themselves to maybe give a presentation in class. Or we want them to feel disappointed when they don't get the job interview. So next time they prep more and present themselves in a different manner in the job interview.
Yeah. We want them to be resilient to get through the hard stuff so that they have a productive, fulfilling life.
Yeah. And that's the same for us. Sometimes we can see it with our kids, but then for us, it's like, oh, right. Like me too, working. Like if you're going to start anything, we're going to feel that discomfort.
Yeah. And if you had a piece of wisdom that you thought was important to share with the listeners, what would that be?
Listening to the thoughts that you're thinking in your head about yourself, your inner voice. Mm.
Yeah.
Like if you could, be sort of a watcher of your brain and like turn up the volume during the day of what she's saying to you, are you your best supporter? Or are you just a really, mean critic? Or is there somewhere in between? That has been one of my greatest joys in the past 2 years, sort of since empty nesting and taking this big move to the other side of the country and having a whole bunch of things, like I don't have any friends. Like, I'm working on making friends, but like there's a lot going on in my life.
Sure.
I can be like, to know that I have the biggest supporter of me in my head is so helpful. And it can start with doing that night practice of something, because I'll sort of like at the end of the night, I'll be like, oh, thank you, Susie. Like you said you were going to do this for work and you didn't. What was going on, sweetheart? I get it. Mm. Okay. Well, tomorrow, let's give you a little more support in this area. Or like, oh, well, look at your tickets done. Like, go you. Yeah. Whereas I had a very different voice in my head for 4 decades or more. So that would be something to just pay some attention to, because that's optional. That negative voice in our head. We often think that we need to be negative to make changes. And you and I both know that the opposite is true.
So absolutely. 100%. And I am a huge proponent of self-kindness, self-love, self-compassion, because we spend all our time with us. We might as well be nice to ourselves, right?
Yeah.
I just saw a meme the other day on social media, like, the voice you hear the most is your own. It should be kindness that you're hearing, not criticism, something like that. I think it probably phrased it better than I did.
I mean, and that's the thing. Like we have, sometimes we're like, oh, my husband isn't nice enough, or oh, my sister is being mean. And it's like, but what about you?
Yeah.
And, or maybe they are, but they're going to go away someday.
Right.
And so who do you have? Like the most important relationship you have is the one you have with yourself. You will always be in relation with you.
Yeah.
And so
we're not going anywhere.
Needing that validation from my husband or a sister or a friend, or that's like, I like it, but I don't want to need it. Yeah. I'm giving that to myself, which is like, if my 30-year-old Susie was listening to this Susie, she'd be like, what are you talking about? That's not possible. But it is.
It is.
Just starts with that awareness, just being aware of it. That like that first, I remember when I was first trying to be aware of it, I would listen, but then I also would start to, my coach said, write down the negative things you're saying to yourself in your head. And I was like, there is not enough paper. Like, what are you talking
right?
about?
Right.
But that really brought awareness to this, that, it, you know, that these thoughts were running in my head. And I'm like, why am I giving them so much airtime?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, then that, and that, yeah, the constant, when we get stuck in that pattern of like, if you did do something wrong, that you just can't, you could just continue to rehash it again and again and again, trying yeah. to work it through versus just being like, well, you know what?
Yeah.
I wasn't perfect today and maybe that's okay today.
Yes.
And
well, we're not
I can do better.
Ever. So I'm like, oh, look right. at that. I right. screwed that up today. That's what I like. I just love like sort of shoulder shrugging with myself. I'm like, oh, you really were not very skilled there. Okay, sweetheart. Like,
you can try again tomorrow and you don't
like
have to do it perfectly.
That part of me in there. It's like, right. It just brings, and it brings ease in your relationships too. When my, like, if my husband was like, you were really snippy yesterday, my old self would have been like, I was not. But if I'm like, yeah, I was, I had some stuff going on, wasn't I? I'm really sorry about that. And, you know, I'm going to work on like, it's just like dropping this like blame and judgment of ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're not perfect. We're awesome and awful.
Perfect.
Everyone is. I like to focus more on the awesomeness for all of you. So yes.
Yeah. Lovely. Well, thank you so, so much for being a guest today, Susie. It was really,
I love it.
Yeah, it was great. It was a great conversation and thanks for sharing about your journey. And yeah, I know we will connect more out there in the social media world and virtual world. So
I love it for sure. Thank I would you. Love listeners. I have the Love Your Life show.
Yes.
On Apple
yes.
Spotify.
Yes. Please. How do people
and
find
I,
you? Sorry.
Yeah. I have my Love Your Life school, which it's just the loveyourlifeschool.com. They can yep. see if it's open for enrollment. I'm playing around with having it open all the time because I just love teaching things in there to help you. You know, I can bring you in wherever you are on your journey and help you out. Also, I wasn't sure where this interview was going with, but a lot of what comes up for people is this people pleasing and sort of putting our self-worth in someone else's hands. And so I have a quiz that's how codependent are you? Your listeners could get for free yes. if they want. And that's just my website, smbwell.com/coda, C-O-D-A. No, I'll do /Elizabeth is what I did. Duh. How about I do /biz?
Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect. Perfect.
Flash.
That'd be great. Yeah. Yep. And I will include all the links in my show notes and so people can find you. And yes, thank you for sharing that. It was the one question I forgot to ask is how do people find you? So thank you. Cause I want
to
be sure the listeners
hear,
know where you are.
Yeah. Like people just reach out to us on social media and tell us what helped you or if you want help. I like truly, I love you in the Love Your Life School, but I also just, I got a lot of traction listening to business podcasts and just sort of questioning my old ways of thinking. And I'm here for that. So reach out.
Yeah, totally. All right. Yeah. Well, thank you, Susie.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. And yay. We will see each other soon.
Yes, for sure.
Wow. That was just an amazing conversation. So full of wisdom and struggle and joy and all the things. I just so appreciate the women who are on the podcast as guests and share their life story of finding their way to their wisest, most authentic selves and what has helped them get here to this point. Because I know for all of us, sometimes it can feel really hard. Sometimes, as we shared, that sometimes knowing what you need doesn't feel clear. And I also know that doing the small steps, taking those small steps of setting healthy boundaries or speaking up for your needs, listening to your inner voice, trusting your wisdom, your intuition, those small steps can bring you to a life you love. Even when not everything is happiness and roses,
you still love your life and love yourself. And that to me is one of the most important pieces of being a wise woman, is learning to love yourself. You know, the truly imperfect human that you are. Well, thanks for listening. Thanks for being a part of the podcast. If you feel so inspired, you can write a review. If you want to be up to date on the podcast or ways to work with me, Biz, you can sign up for my newsletter. That's at elizabethcushcoaching.com/sign-up. That's all one word, sign up. So you can find me there and you can find the link to sign up for the newsletter. And then you'll be in on all the news and details of the podcast and working with me. Have a wonderful rest of your day. Have a lovely week. And I look forward to connecting with you next time here on the podcast. Thanks for listening to the Awaken Your Wise Woman podcast. The information in this podcast is not a substitute for seeking help from a licensed mental health professional. Music by Andy Cush, sound editing by Laura Disler, and show notes by Kathy Cush. If you'd like more information about me, Biz Cush, and the resources shared today, go to awakenyourwisewoman.com.